Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Brought to you today by Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get your Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, I could not be more pleased to announce that none of them have to do with the Alabama Senate race. We will get two bits of good news no matter what happens today and one bit of bad news. The good news is the campaign ends today. The other piece of good news is that one of these people will lose. The bad news is one of these people will win. So let's move on to the good martini. Fox News has added a new dimension to the ongoing uncovering of the connection between the Justice Department and Fusion GPS during the 2016 presidential election. Fusion GPS, of course, the company behind the dossier, which eventually involved former British intelligence official Christopher Steele. And it was just a number of days ago that Bruce Orr, a Justice Department official, was demoted from a pretty high position at the Justice Department due to conversations he had and should not have had with Fusion GPS officials, including Mr. Steele. Now there's a new wrinkle to the story. Here's James Rosen last night on Special Report with Brett Baer.
Now Fox News has confirmed that Nellie Orr, an academic Russia expert and the wife of Bruce Orr, worked for Fusion GPS last year. Indeed, was paid by the opposition research firm through the summer and fall of 2016, a timeline that places her on the company payroll around the time the dossier was funneled to the FBI, and perhaps up through the election, some 2 weeks after which her husband met secretly with Glenn Simpson.
Glenn Simpson worked with Fusion GPS as well. Jim, you know, when Mueller put this team together, there were a lot of people scrunching up their faces saying, man, he's got a lot of Democratic donors on this thing. And people said, well, even lawyers have political opinions, especially lawyers in some cases. Don't assume anything by that. But now in the past few weeks, you've got Strzok, who massaged the Clinton email investigation. You've got Weissman, who was at Clinton's supposed or anticipated victory party. You've got Ree, who represented Ben Rhodes. And now you've got this cozy relationship between the Justice Department and Fusion GPS. So what do we know for sure at this point, and how significant is it?
Well, there are a couple of pieces we don't know. We don't know necessarily how instrumental she was in the creation of this dossier. We don't know for certain whether she was some sort of back-channel way of connecting Fusion GPS to the Department of Justice. But it is a pretty remarkable coincidence. And it is the sort of thing where you'd like to see people in positions of power with significant investigative and prosecutorial power to exercise better discretion, right? That if you're, you know, if there's a dossier going around that your wife may have had a hand in, if you're, you know, Associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Orr, you really got to say, look, I can't have anything to do with that. I can't be seen as promoting my wife's work. I can't be seen as poo-pooing my wife's work if, you know, people think we're having a fight at home or something like that. You're supposed to keep all that stuff at arm's length. You're supposed to be objective and fair and you know, to avoid even the appearance of impropriety. And if you're meeting with the dossier and saying, hey, this looks good, yeah, we definitely should, you know, start an investigation into this. This is a big deal. Yeah. Oh, by the way, thanks for hiring my wife. You know, like, people are going to ask legitimate questions. And, you know, I you'd like to think Mueller and everybody else around them would have the understanding that if you're going to do an investigation into the Republican presidential nominee in 2016, everything you do has to be purer than Caesar's wife, right? You can't give him that sort of a stick to hit you with. And we've just seen this time and again in this investigation. So look, we will see what happens if and when Robert Mueller comes out and makes some sort of final report. And here's what we found investigating alleged collusion or things like that between the Trump campaign and the government of Russia. Oh, by the way, according to Meet the Press, they said he's focusing mostly on events going on during the transition, which is not really pre-election collusion or something like that. You're kind of left wondering, wait a second, what exactly is the purpose of this investigation, and what are they finding? If somebody like Flynn or Manafort, they lie to investigators, okay, fine, you know, you can nail them on that. But I thought we were trying to figure out whether Russia had done something, whether they colluded with Trump. And if they haven't colluded with Trump, the president can run around and say, look, not only is this a Did they find nothing? This is an investigation that is run by a bunch of partisans. It's a witch hunt, and it's ridiculous. And each time you hear something like this, you do find yourself wondering, why is the Department of Justice relying on groups like Fusion GPS for information like that? Wouldn't they want to verify this stuff independently? And the answer is, if one, you know, if all of their spouses are working there, well, okay, I guess that explains that, doesn't it?
It certainly does. So if, in fact, there is fire to this smoke, and if you watch Hannity wall to wall, they've already reached that conclusion. We're not quite there yet. But if, in fact, there is a trail of this dossier that was started during the Republican primary season that was then picked up and funded by the DNC and the Clinton campaign, and if, in fact, that was the premise for the surveillance on the Trump campaign, what do we take from that? How significant is that?
You know, Greg, everything you're mentioning there kind of reminds me of a comment from the former acting head of the CIA, Michael Morell, who's a longtime worked in the agency, worked in the Bush administration, worked in the Obama years. He retired and he decided it was time to get political. He wrote an op-ed endorsing Hillary Clinton in the New York Times in August 2016. He called Trump a threat to our national security. He did an interview with Politico's Susan Glasser, and it was this really interesting kind of self-awareness on his part where he realizes that, look, he is seen as very much a representative of the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, maybe he's been a lifelong Democrat, but he is seen primarily, but he is defined by his work in this nonpartisan institution that every president relies on to giving him the best information possible. Around this same time, Michael Hayden, a guy who I think very highly of, but he's a former director of the CIA, former director of the National Security Agency, and he too came out and said, Trump is a menace, Trump is bad, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Trump wins the election, and he's already seen two intelligence officials come out and say, in a pretty unprecedented format, the electing this president is bad. We don't like this guy. And we all know how Trump, carries grudges and things like that. You have this animosity on Trump's part, and now you're seeing all these cases in which the Federal Bureau of Investigation was apparently willing to work with a partisan firm, a political hack job, and got a chunk of their information from a report that was funded in part by the DNC and by Hillary Clinton. Look, I don't like it when Trump goes on these tirades and denounces the Central Intelligence Agency, denounces the FBI, denounces law enforcement. But he's got a bit of a legitimate gripe here, in that some people within these organizations that are extraordinarily important and extraordinarily powerful acted in either an unwise or, in some cases, an overtly partisan way in 2016. And that is going to erode public trust in these institutions. And I think to function as a country, we need to be able to trust these institutions.
More to come on that story, to be sure. So let's move, Jim, to our bad martini, and let's talk about some deep, serious policy issues. No, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the latest major Twitter fight involving President Trump. And this time, his opponent is New York's junior Senator Democrat Kirsten Gillibrand. Just last week, of course, she led the Twitter parade demanding the resignation of Al Franken, which she sort of got. And I want to talk about that a little bit more at the end of this martini. But now she, of course, is demanding the resignation of President Trump. Yesterday, three of the Trump accusers of sexual assault or harassment that we heard from back in October of 2016 told their stories again. I believe a fourth one told her story today. And so Gillibrand is now leading the effort to get Trump to resign. And so Trump tweeted at her earlier this morning saying, quote, "Lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer, and someone who would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them, is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked. Used." So that's obviously a reference to her saying that Bill Clinton should have resigned after she absolutely cozied up to the Clintons until they were no political use to her. Gillibrand firing back, "You cannot silence me or the millions of women who have gotten off the sidelines to speak out about the unfitness and shame you have brought to the Oval Office." And now you've got Democrats all across Capitol Hill and Twitter's full of people now claiming that Trump's tweet towards Gillibrand constituted sexual harassment because of the fact that he said she would do anything for donations. So, Jim, clearly, with so much on the plate of tax reform and funding the government, there's immigration policy, lots of stuff we could be talking about. Instead, we're talking about this. Any winners here, or are we just wasting time?
You know, Greg, I think Senator Gillibrand and President Trump really deserve each other. There's nothing. First of all, I couldn't believe that CNN treated this. Now that I'm back from CNN, and God knows if I'll ever get invited back again, I can say I can't believe they treated the Gillibrand. I am calling on the president to resign. What do you think? He's going to do it? Oh, Mr. I'm sure somebody rushed into the Oval Office. Mr. President, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is calling for you to resign. Mr. President, I guess you have no choice but to do it because, you know, she's requesting or she's demanding your resignation. You know, big deal. Every Democratic senator wants President Trump to resign, although except for the ones who are like, wait a minute, Pence might be more effective and more conservative, so we can't do that. She is a genuine headline chaser. I did a piece on her for National Review a little while back, pointing out all the different ways she's had exceptionally convenient shifts in her policy views. It always happened to align with whatever her political needs are of any particular moment. But she did call for Al Franken to resign. A lot of people wondered if that was a little bit of opportunism or headline chasing, but she didn't. And unsurprisingly, now that Franken has resigned, she's turning around and calling for Trump to resign. And unsurprisingly, Trump is not doing that. My suspicion is that but also notice that there were a couple of Democrats who joined her. Cory Booker was second out of the gate, right? Cory Booker, another person who's got presidential ambitions for 2020. Wait, don't forget me. I want him to resign too. Yes, me too. Yeah. ironic use of the Me Too hashtag in that case. Why would this bother Trump so much? Democratic senator calls on you to resign. So what? It's not like she's got power to do that. But of course, I think I'm sure, no doubt he probably remembers her asking for donations. And it's, you know, that's a fairly fair shot. Also kind of interesting, Trump donated to her for several years. Kind of an interesting, who's the bigger fool? She for asking for the donations or him for giving the donations? Either way, like, he calls her out on this, but clearly there's a not so subtle allusion with an A, not an I, suggesting that there was something improper going on in her request for donations. This happens all the time. Of course, once Trump attacks her, that's exactly what Kirsten Gillibrand wants. She wants to be attacked by Trump because then she can respond the way she did and say, no, look at me. I'm leading the fight against Trump. And, you know, she seamlessly gets to be, you know, play victim, and she gets to turn around and then say, you know, but I'm not being a victim. I'm also standing up to him. Also, by the way, I thought an interesting and an appropriate little just kind of final footnote on this. Elizabeth Warren put out a tweet. I don't have it directly in front of me right now, but the gist was, how dare you slut shame my colleague, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand? But nevertheless, she persisted, reminding her moment of Elizabeth Warren's prominent moment. Now, Trump didn't use the term slut, but Warren made it explicit. You get a little bit of a passive-aggressive 2020 rival message in that. Is that a not entirely supportive message of support?
Let me tell you what Kirsten Gillibrand is not. You cannot call her that.
She's not an axe murderer. Why are you calling her an axe murderer? Yes.
Jim, it's been pointed out today that Al Franken has still not set an actual resignation date, which leads to the question, if Roy Moore wins today, does Al Franken actually resign?
I think it's a fair question because I first of all, you could tell from his statement he didn't want to resign. He didn't admit any wrongdoing. He continues to claim that that he remembers them differently and that some of these accusations are false, raising the question of what exactly he thinks he did to warrant resignation. And if he doesn't really think he's done anything to warrant resignation, then the possibility of him pulling Larry Craig and forgetting to go follow through on his promise of resignation is not so unthinkable. And I very easily could see him saying something like, look, an institution that has room for Roy Moore, I will not be a sacrificial lamb in the name of all this. In a bizarre way, I kind of want to see this happen just to see if every Democrat who called for his resignation also does the 180-degree about face and say, yeah, sure, it's fine. He can stay.
Which would benefit Trump, too, because then if all the cads get to stay, then there's less pressure on him, I guess. I don't.
It's a bipartisan agreement that no one should have any standards.
All right. Wow. How do you get in a Dollar Shave Club out of that conversation? But we've talked about Dollar Shave Club a lot in the past. You've heard us talk about the amazing shave we get from the razor, especially when we use it with the Dr. Carver shave butter. Well, we're back to tell you that membership in the club has gotten even better. In fact, I'm adding even more Dollar Shave Club products to my daily routine.
Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, and shower, everything you need. They have me looking and feeling amazing, and it's all of their own original stuff. They only use the finest premium ingredients, and they deliver it to you just like they do with their razors. This means no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down the aisles, looking at shelf upon shelf and asking, what is that? And what do I do with it? Because the staff will not be able to help you. I use Dollar Shave Club for just about everything, and they've got me covered head to toe. And with gift memberships and e-gift cards available, Dollar Shave Club can help cover the names on your holiday shopping list as well.
We want you to love Dollar Shave Club as much as we do, so we've arranged for you to try your first month of their best razor, along with the travel size versions of shave butter, body cleanser, and yes, the butt wipes, for just $5. After that, replacement cartridges ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the Dollar Shave Club starter set. Get yours for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, our crazy martini relates to yesterday's good martini. And for those who may not remember right away, our good martini yesterday was that the terror attack at the Port Authority bus station in Times Square in New York City was a dud. The Bangladeshi native basically set his bomb off too early and only injured himself. A couple people went to the hospital for headaches and so forth, but obviously nowhere near as bad as it could have been. So today's crazy martini is that the family of this guy, they're really upset with the aggressive investigation going on now in the wake of his attempt to kill lots of people. This is the New York Post. The family of the alleged ISIS-inspired Port Authority bomber said they were heartbroken by the attack on Monday and blasted law enforcement agencies for what they claimed were heavy-handed tactics by investigators. Quote, "We are heartbroken by the violence that was targeted at our city today and by the allegations being made against a member of our family," said the statement read by Albert Fox Khan, legal director for the New York chapter of the Council for Islamic Relations. "But we're also outraged by the behavior of the law enforcement officials who held children as small as 4 years old out in the cold and who pulled a teenager out of high school classes to interrogate him without lawyer, without his parents. It was not immediately clear if the 4-year-old or the teenager were related to the suspect." They said, "These are not the sorts of actions we expect from our justice system. We have every confidence that our justice system will find the truth behind this attack and that we will, in the end, be able to learn what occurred today." So, Jim, these people are really upset that the law enforcement in New York City and that the federal level were desperate for answers, and they might have actually gotten to some critical people before the family members could coach them, and that there's no indication here that either of them asked for a lawyer.
Remember the real victims here, people. Not the people who had an explosion go off right near them during their walking down this hallway in the middle of New York City. No. Remember the bomber's family. You know how you can avoid this type of bad day occurring to you or your family, Greg? Don't have a suicide bomber in your family. This is not the sort of thing that's going to happen to most of us. And look, if you happen to have a suicide bomber in your family who tries to kill a lot of people in the middle of New York City on the Monday morning commute, you're going to have a bad day. Yes, you know, law enforcement is going to, as soon as they figure out the identity of the bomber, they're going to go after every particular family member, both for questioning and for all they know, everyone else in the family could be a suicide bomber too. We've seen multiple attacks in Paris and in New York and in cities like that. Look, they can't, you know that you're innocent. Hopefully, maybe, probably. Law enforcement doesn't know that. So they have to treat you like a potential suicide bomber and suspect. They don't, you know, it's unfortunate that the 4-year-old got pulled out. It's unfortunate that the teenager got questioned. But you know what? This is part of how you track down a potential network of suicide bombers. Because when there is an individual suicide bomb, they cannot make the assumption, it's probably just one guy. No worries. We don't have to do anything like that. This is how law enforcement works in this country. And you know, this is the way, and the reason it operates this way is because the threat of terrorism is real. It is dire. And lo and behold, sometimes people, family members of one terrorist end up joining terrorist groups as well. So look, sorry. You had a really rough day. You know who else had a rough day? Everyone who got hit by the bomb. All right. So I'm sorry. My sympathy is all spent. I've got other folks I need to worry about. If there's genuine abuse, some sort of beatings or something like that, then it's a different story. But no, you know what? If a member of your family decides to kill themselves and try to take a whole bunch of people with them, you're going to have a lot of aggressive questioning from law enforcement. Just the way things operate. Welcome to the world we live in. We've lived in it since September 11th, 2001.
Yes, we have. Not a lot of sympathy there. Jim, have a good day. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our good friends at Dollar Shave Club right now for just $5. $5. You can get the starter set, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. And tune in again Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.